Picture a middle-aged man standing on a St. Louis street corner in tattered clothes, desperately trying to sell firewood he'd chopped himself. Passersby avert their eyes from this obvious failure, a former army captain reduced to peddling kindling. Within 7 years, this same man would command the largest military force in American history and accept a surrender that ended the Civil War. Ulysses S. Grant's transformation from street vendor to national savior reads like fiction, yet it reveals something profound about human potential. Greatness often hides in the most unlikely places, waiting for the right moment to emerge. Young Ulysses possessed an almost mystical connection with horses, standing one-legged on galloping steeds by age 5. At 8, his father sent him to buy a colt. Grant immediately blurted out the entire negotiating strategy, offering $20, then $22.50, and finally $25 if necessary. The seller naturally charged the maximum. The merciless teasing that followed taught him a harsh lesson. People enjoy watching others fail. This childhood humiliation shaped his lifelong reticence and distrust of self-promotion. Despite his equestrian gifts, Grant detested his father's tannery with its blood-slicked floors and swarming rats. He ate meat burned crisp his entire life, unable to stomach anything resembling blood. When his father secured him a West Point appointment, Grant protested but went anyway. A clerical error changed his name from Hiram Ulysses to Ulysses S. Grant, a bureaucratic mistake that stuck for life. In Mexico, Grant displayed remarkable courage, dragging wounded comrades to safety and commandeering a church belfry to fire on enemy positions. Yet he called the Mexican War one of the most unjust ever waged by a stronger against a weaker nation, believing the Civil War was divine punishment for this transgression. This moral clarity would later define his presidency's approach to civil rights. After Mexico, Grant married Julia Dent and seemed set for a respectable military career. Then came his posting to isolated Oregon Territory, separated from his family by months of travel. Lonely and desperate, he tried farming, shipping chickens, and trading ice, failing spectacularly at each. His business partner observed that Grant was the perfect soul of honor and truth and believed everyone else as artless as himself. This naivete would haunt him throughout his life. Alcohol became his escape. Though he drank less frequently than other officers, liquor affected him dramatically. One glass showed on him, two or three made him stupid. Facing pressure from his commanding officer, Grant resigned in 1854 with no profession and mounting desperation. The next 7 years brought relentless failure. He failed at farming, debt collection, even a county engineer position because he looked too shabby. At his lowest point, he peddled handmade letter goods to former acquaintances who pretended not to see him. Yet these humiliations forged something essential. Despite owning no property and drowning in debt, he freed his slave William Jones when Grant desperately needed the auction money. This moral backbone, choosing principle over profit in dire poverty, would later make him the most committed defender of Black civil rights to occupy the White House until Lyndon Johnson. By 1860, Grant accepted a clerk position in his father's Galena leather goods store, working under his younger brother for $800 annually. At 38, he seemed destined for permanent obscurity. Then, Confederate artillery opened fire on Fort Sumter. Grant's rise was meteoric. Within months, he commanded a regiment. Within a year, he was a brigadier general. What separated him from other Union commanders wasn't tactical brilliance, it was understanding what actually mattered. When Confederate General Buckner requested surrender terms at Fort Donelson, Grant replied, "No terms except an unconditional and immediate surrender can be accepted." The North, starved for victories, nicknamed him Unconditional Surrender Grant. His partnership with William Tecumseh Sherman became the war's most consequential friendship. Sherman candidly assessed their dynamic. "I am a damned sight smarter man than Grant. I know a great deal more about war, military history, strategy." Yet Sherman acknowledged Grant's unique gift. He knows, he divines, when the supreme hour has come in a campaign of battle, and always boldly seizes it. At Vicksburg, Grant executed one of history's most audacious campaigns. He marched his army down the western bank of the Mississippi, crossed below the city, and attacked from the east, cutting himself off from supply lines entirely. In 18 days, his forces marched 180 miles, won 5 battles, and trapped the Confederate army. The July 4, 1863 surrender split the Confederacy in half. Lincoln finally had his general. As general-in-chief, Grant revolutionized Union strategy. All armies would coordinate, converging on Confederate forces simultaneously. Unlike predecessors fixated on capturing Richmond, Grant understood that destroying Lee's army was the path to victory. When an aide fretted about Lee's tactics, Grant snapped, "I am heartily tired of hearing about what Lee is going to do. Try to think what we are going to do ourselves." The 1864 Overland Campaign revealed his relentless determination. At the Wilderness, Spotsylvania, and Cold Harbor, he hammered Lee continuously, suffering horrific casualties that earned him the nickname "The Butcher." Yet he grasped what critics missed. The Confederacy couldn't replace losses. The Union could. At Appomattox, Grant's surrender terms revealed his character. Confederate officers kept their sidearms. Soldiers took horses home for spring planting. He ordered rations for starving troops and stopped Union celebrations. "The war is over. The rebels are our countrymen again." This magnanimity earned respect from former enemies, who later served as pallbearers at his funeral. Grant's presidency remains deeply misunderstood. Scandals plagued his administration. The whiskey ring, credit mobilier, his brother Orville testifying about kickbacks. His trusting nature made him vulnerable to exploitation. Yet focusing solely on corruption obscures his most significant achievement. He was the most forceful defender of Black civil rights to occupy the White House for nearly a century. When the Ku Klux Klan launched a terror campaign against Black voters and white Republicans, Grant responded with unprecedented federal action. He pushed Congress to pass the Enforcement Acts, suspended habeas corpus, and deployed federal troops against Klan violence. The Department of Justice conducted thousands of prosecutions, effectively crushing the Klan in many southern states. Frederick Douglass recognized Grant's significance, noting he appointed 249 African Americans in one department alone. Grant made Ebenezer Bassett the first Black U.S. diplomat and appointed James Milton Turner as minister to Liberia. When others abandoned Reconstruction, Grant fought to protect the rights his armies had secured. As Douglass wrote, "In him, the Negro found a protector, the Indian a friend, a vanquished foe a brother, an imperiled nation a savior." After his presidency, Grant's trusting nature betrayed him one last time. He partnered with Ferdinand Ward, the young Napoleon of finance, who operated a massive Ponzi scheme. When it collapsed in 1884, Grant was penniless at 62. Weeks later, doctors diagnosed terminal throat cancer. Facing death and destitution, he began writing his memoirs to provide for Julia. Despite excruciating pain requiring constant cocaine sprays, Grant produced 336,000 words of masterful prose in a single year. He worked through sleepless nights, racing against death. On July 23, 1885, he completed the manuscript. 5 days later, he died. His last written words, "I think I have made the last surrender." Over 1 million mourners lined New York streets for his funeral. Union generals Sherman and Sheridan served as pallbearers, alongside Confederate generals Johnston and Buckner. Julia specifically requested former enemies to honor her husband's reconciliation efforts. Grant's memoirs became a bestseller, earning his family nearly $450,000, the financial security he'd pursued unsuccessfully his entire life. Grant's story reveals something essential. Greatness isn't about never failing. It's about what you do after failure breaks you. The man who sold firewood on street corners saved the Union, freed millions, and died writing one of history's great military memoirs. Your past failures don't define your future impact.